This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 High FM.
And this is The Deep Dive, and I am, in fact, Brooke Spector, and I am live. I am not an AI reader, I promise you. I am a real physical person. I'm sitting at my kitchen table, I'm looking at my laptop, and I welcome you all to this morning's program. I want to apologize, first of all. Last week, we were going to bring you Helen Zilla's interview. There were some technical issues, and we've resolved them, and we'll do that after I finish my introduction. But I think the contents of it are certainly relevant going forward, as opposed to simply being a statement for the moment. Mozilla, of course, is in the news a lot because she has been declared the official candidate of her party for the mayorship of Johannesburg in the upcoming local and provincial elections. And over the next number of months, we will try to bring you interviews with other candidates as they are declared, as well as analysis and examinations of the positions and the personalities, perhaps too, of the various candidates. But we'll lead off with Helen Zilla because she was the first to answer the phone. And so there we are. And we'll do that right after some messages. And following that, we're going to have a discussion with a young political analyst, Humelo Abba, out of the Free State University. Too often, I think that we tend to think about the personalities of candidates, and we don't think enough about the larger demography of the electorate. And I suspect there is a significant gap between older voters who think about what in America are called kitchen table issues, and in South Africa would be properly termed service delivery issues, and younger voters who are beginning to find their way to the political process. And we'll want to look at that a little bit with Mr. Abba when we return after the half hour mark. But first, here's a message that I should read. We do commercial messages and station ideas. ICASA must get its due, and the sponsors, of course, are crucial to the process of the station. And so here it is. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. And after this, we'll have some other messages, and then we'll go right into our interview with Helen Zilla. Over to you, Craig. We're speaking with Helen Zilla, who is now officially the confirmed candidate by the Democratic Alliance for the mayor's job in Johannesburg. Helen probably needs very little in the way of introduction to most listeners. She's been in politics for many years and actually a native of Johannesburg. But let's get a little bit behind the headlines for a minute. As you were, not the word growing up, as you were becoming involved in politics and in life, who were your mentors? Who were the people who guided you and gave and influenced you in the way you were thinking about what you needed or wanted to do?
Obviously, firstly, my parents were very influential. They were always extremely politically aware, informed, and involved. And that set a good example for us as kids. Then I went to work at the Rand Daily Mail, and of course, Alistair Sparks was very influential in my life. And from a young age, I joined the Young Progressives, of the Progressive Party with Helen Suzman. And although I didn't get, obviously, to interact with her much because she was right up there in the stratosphere, And we were very junior workers helping her in her office in Ivy Street in Norwood. Nevertheless, she was always one of the people right up there whose example I cherished.
I mean, I remember Helen Suzman as this massive figure, intellectually and politically. But I also want to know what, for example, what book that you read that shaped your intellectual view of the world, that helped create the kind of ideology that you bring to politics. And you can't say the Bible because everybody
No,
says that.
I'm definitely not. No. I won't say that. What book that I read that shaped my approach to politics? My goodness, that's a big question. I suppose Animal Farm. I mean, it was an extraordinary book. I read it at school, two books actually, Lord of the Flies and Animal Farm. And I think both of them have a crucial message. Animal Farm's message is power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it shows you how and why that happens, irrespective of the ideology. If you have too much power that is not held to account, that is what happened. And Lord of the Flies, I think, tells you that if there aren't systems and institutions and structures, people degenerate into savagery quite easily.
They're important books, but they also have a rather pessimistic view of human nature.
No, not
They
they don't have a pessimistic view on human nature. They have a realistic view of human nature. So that is why, for example, we have to develop institutions in society to hold power to account and to have the separation of powers and to have an adjudicating party that is accountable only to the law and not to powerful people. So that is very, very important. And that is a realistic view of human nature. That's why we've developed all the institutions we've developed. It's because power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I
And
take your
it
point.
also shows you how important institutions are to keeping us decent and humane and civilized, I suppose, for want of a better word. And Lord of the Flies shows you that the minute those are stripped away, we can easily descend to savagery.
I'll take your point on that. Let me think about that for a bit. You spent your formative early adult years in Johannesburg, obviously, ran Daily Mail, so forth. But then you went on to Cape Town, where you had a career in government as mayor and then as provincial head, as premier. What's bringing you back now to Johannesburg, a place that you left years ago effectively?
Well, my goal has always been to try and ensure that South Africa could work and to be the first country, starting from our extremely complex demography, to become a sustainable democracy. And that's been my guiding light my whole life. That's what I've wanted to try to contribute to. And the Gauteng metro is on the next great frontier. We're not going to achieve that for South Africa unless Gauteng becomes part of that project. And it's not going to become part of that project unless the metros become part of that project, because Gauteng is a province of metros. And so that means Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, and Johannesburg assume a massive, massive importance in the next stage of South Africa's democratization process. And so I come from Joburg. I love Joburg. I've got family in Joburg. And I felt I also needed a big new challenge personally. I've run out of challenges in my current job. It's rather too routine for me now. So I need a big new challenge. And that seemed to be it.
You and I are close in age. Many people I've talked to about you say, why isn't she doing the kinds of things that people our age do? Enjoy grandchildren,
I do
finish.
enjoy my grandchildren, Brooks.
But
I
they're
love my grandchildren.
are they in Cape Town or Johannesburg?
They're in Cape Town, but I mean, many, many, many South Africans tragically have grandchildren and grandchildren all over the world that they hardly ever see. I mean, that is the tragedy. I want people's grandchildren to come back to South Africa because they think there's a future here. And that's what my work's going to make me do.
Let me focus in on the role of the mayor a little bit. I mean, it sounds like an attractive job. It sounds like a prestigious position. I had a chance to talk with your would-be counterpart in Cape Town a short while ago, Gordon Hill Lewis, and he's one of the things he said to me made a real impression on me and my thinking about the role of mayors in the city. And his argument was that so many of the really basic governmental functions in metropolitan areas and in big cities in this country are really beyond the reach of the mayor. Education, major portions of policing, electricity to a considerable degree, many of the roads and transportation networks, and at least in Johannesburg, the water supply. What kind of power does a mayor in Johannesburg actually have to affect real change as opposed to the more superficial aspects of it?
Mayors have a lot of power. Mayors have probably more power than any other individuals single-handedly in our governance system. An executive mayor has power over all of the things that local government is supposed to deliver, but obviously our entire system of governance assumes a cooperative governance system. So it's much, much more difficult if you're a mayor in a DA-run town in an ANC-run province, because then you're going to get zero cooperation from the ANC, as I found in 2006 when I was mayor of Cape Town and Ibrahim Rasool was premier of the Western Cape. So it was extremely complex and difficult, and he tried to counter me at every turn, and he tried to get me out of power at every turn. And it's very difficult when you're running a DA province and you've got an ANC national government, because almost every function provincially is a cooperative governance function. So it assumes that people are going to cooperate. And that is a big assumption and a big stretch, but there are still many things you can do. Of course, Rand Water and Joburg Water have to work together, and a lot of the problems lie with Rand Water. But there's a lot that Joburg can do, for example, like fix the reservoirs and fix the leaks in the pipes and make sure that Joburg isn't losing 46% of its water every day. The city can fix the traffic lights. The city can fix the potholes. The city can fix the street lights. The city can remove the refuse. Those are things that fall under the city. Now, obviously, we don't have any power over education at all, nor over the major tertiary health system at all, and nor over large parts of the traffic and policing system. In fact, most of policing, because metros can't do investigations or anything like that in policing. So huge powers lie outside of the scope of the mayor. But we're fighting all the way to the Constitutional Court at the moment to argue that it is irrational for the police minister not to delegate policing functions to metros. That is a case that is being taken by the city of Cape Town. And I really do believe that they've got a jolly good chance of winning that case, which would change the ballgame entirely. So yes, we don't have all the powers, but we have considerable numbers of those powers that can impact and change the lives of citizens.
And you've alluded to a number of things that could be fixed, what is popularly called low-hanging fruit. Get those potholes under control, get the traffic lights working in their normal capacity as traffic lights, fix the street lights and so forth. But all of it takes one, besides willpower and energetic leadership, it takes one other component that's crucial that we haven't talked about, which is, of course, money. And the city of Johannesburg does not collect the kind of funding necessary from its tax base to do a lot of the things that citizens that I talk to, that you talk to, citizens really, really want to see done properly because it costs money. Where are you going to get this money?
Well, the city of Joburg has an 89 billion rand budget. Now, they're very good on projecting and fulfilling their spending, but they're very bad at meeting their revenue requirements. So they only ever collect 85% of what they bill, which is much too low. It should be about 97%. But the truth is that if they could fix their billing system, it would change a lot. And certainly, if I'm the mayor and government departments don't pay their rates and service charges, I'm not going to have any hesitation in cutting them off. That's what I did in Cape Town. The Department of Local Government nationally wasn't paying its rates and service charges in Cape Town, so I cut them off. And so you can continue. And until you develop a culture of payment, you don't start with the guys at the bottom, the poverty-stricken people. You start with the guys at the top who are not paying. And once you do that and you cascade it downwards, you develop a culture of payment. And that is what we did in Cape Town, and I plan to do the same thing in Johannesburg.
People who are in Cape Town and the Western Cape generally have a good opinion of you, but they do argue, some of them and people I've talked to, that you spend more time paying attention to the well-off parts of the city and the city's areas, and the areas frequented by tourists, including foreign tourists, than you do for the poorer parts of town. And
exactly the opposite is true, Brooke. That really irritates me, because exactly the opposite is true. Cape Town, and you should have raised this with Jordan Hill-Lewis, but Cape Town has a capital budget, an infrastructure budget in the next 3 years of 40 billion rand. That is more than any other city in South Africa put together. Cape Town has a projected capital budget for infrastructure of 40 billion rand, and 75% of that is going to benefit the poorer areas of Cape Town. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. We pour resources, free basic services, whatever you can think of, we point to the poorer areas, and that is cross-subsidized by the richer areas, to the point that the richer areas are getting irritated that they believe we are over-subsidizing. So it's exactly the opposite of the perception, 100%.
Well, what you've just said, of course, is standard practice for most governments, that there's cross-subsidization from people who pay more to people who can pay less. But nevertheless,
not to the scale that you have in Cape Town. It is an extraordinary scale of cross-subsidization. I mean, 75% of a 40 billion rand budget is a lot.
You would apply the same principle, the same yardsticks in Johannesburg. Monies drawn from richer areas would go toward less well-endowed areas then.
You always have to have some level of cross-subsidization. Always have to have some level of cross-subsidization. I'm afraid I've got another call coming through now, which was supposed to be at 15:15.
Okay, I want to ask you one last question, which is the really vexed issue of coalition government. The presumption is that you will not gain a majority of councillors, and you will not control the city in whole by yourself with one party, but you'll have to work with others. How are you going to do that?
I mean, I did it in Cape Town. We had a seven-party coalition in 2006. You take the least bad option. Obviously, having a coalition is never your first option, but if voters don't give you a 50% plus one majority, then you have to. And you look around at what the options are to do the sums and get above 50%, and then you choose the least bad option and you make it work. That's how you do it.
I look forward to having a conversation with you again in the future. Assuming you become mayor, we're going to have to talk about all these things in great detail and in serious depth. And I wish you good luck.
Good. Thank you very much, Brooks. And good to talk to you. And I'll speak to you again soon. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.